Former Douglas East MHK Chris Robertshaw wants us to have a greater say on the major policy proposals government brings forward. He believes government should act as a unified body rather than a separate siloed department, and he wants an independent political think tank to be formed to help generate policy innovation across government. Mr. Robertshaw joins me now in the studio. Are you the inspiration behind Future Isle of Man?
Oh, gosh, I hope so. It's emerged from, well, political experience right the way through from 2010 when I first went into politics and very quickly arrived at the conclusion that the function of government wasn't working as well as it should. That developed later on into, once I was a minister, Alan Bell asking me to be Minister of Policy and Reform. I spent just over nine months, examining what I thought was wrong. I don't think the House and Council of Ministers was ready for it at that time. I wanted to finish after that particular House, but didn't because I felt guilty about walking away from something I felt so strongly about, and stood in the last House that I attended or was a member of, producing a manifesto called The Little Green Book of Government Reform. And there was a peculiar element to it because part of me wanted to get the story across. The other part of me wanted to sort of walk away from politics with an excuse because I felt guilty about walking away. And when I went around the constituency, and constituency members will remember this, I think, where when I knocked on the door and they raised the subject, I said, no, please read my manifesto. And if you don't agree with it, please don't vote for me, you know. And they did. And I then spent the next 5 years trying to develop and enhance the policy review system and encouraged Tim Wool to agree to a Constitutional, Legal and Justice Committee, which made another one. And I was on most of them, all bar one. The only one I wasn't on was on the health and social care one. But of course, prior to that, I'd been Minister of Social Care, and prior to being in politics, I'd been a private sector member of the Hospital Administration Committee. So I don't want to be arrogant about this, but my understanding right across government was very significant. And it, as it were, that was the bedrock of me arriving at this concept of we really do need change to the way our government system works. I'm not talking about policies now.
So, before we get too much further into all this, Future Isle of Man, what actually is it? Because it's not a political party, is it?
No, it's not a political party. And for absolute clarity, I'm not standing, I'm too old for that now, but I want to, with others, through Future IOM, I want to, in the next year running up to the election, focus on the issues of function. And Future Isle of Man is a concept which does not deliver on policies. That's a matter for people standing to decide for themselves, whether they're an individual or a member of a party, what they believe they want to bring to Tynwald. This is all about how government actually works, and it's because it's not working properly that we've got all the problems that we currently have. So Future Isle of Man has three pillars. One is improving our democratic process. The second is improving our efficiency and productivity. And the third is improving strategy. We are deficient on all three. The fact that we're deficient on our democratic process is creating a growing gap in trust between the people and executive government.
And that's not a problem unique to the Isle of Man, is it? This is happening across democracies across Europe, really.
Yes, absolutely it is. I totally agree with that. And even the party political system in the UK is now in complete shreds. It's a complete mess. But if there's one exception, it would be Switzerland. And there we have a country with four different languages, in four different cantons, separated by huge mountains. And how did they make sure that their system of government works to the satisfaction, if you like, of the people? And they introduced a system of referenda, which is the first pillar, this concept of improving democracy. And it's not transferring the Swiss system to the Isle of Man, but it's taking elements out of that and introducing the concept and hoping that over time and experience, our confidence will grow in bringing back the people much closer to government and to Tynwald. So that's the first part. The second part is about efficiency. And the problem started to develop here when we moved from the board system to the ministerial system in 1986. Didn't show themselves initially. They've shown themselves more and more of late. But the consequence of all of this is that having eight legal entities, each independent of the other, has created this sort of silo effect in government, which is not healthy. And also, and I've been in Council of Ministers and watched it in action, where it remains a silo principle all the way through. And you can, these days, you can arrive at a decision on the floor of Tynwald, which appears to enjoy a majority of the members' votes, but in reality, behind that, it could very well have a deficit because the minister might be at odds with his members in the department. He or she may have got something through Council of Ministers on a majority vote only. And so you could actually arrive with a decision in a particular direction which enjoys less than half the support of half the members, and that's hugely dangerous. The third element, and this is a very quick summary of it, is our strategic system. And again, the root cause here lies in the overpowerful bureaucratic nature of our independent departments. And strategic thinking comes up from the bottom rather than holistically right across the piece from the top. And the three pillars that Future Isle of Man are focused on will fix all these three. But very importantly, all three elements are linked, inherently linked with each other. So the formation of high-level, high-quality strategic thinking will be linked to the concept of referenda where it's appropriate. But it also does something else, and this is really important. At the moment, the role of our chief minister is too weak. All he or she can really do is hire and fire members into the Council of Ministers, and at some point you sort of run out. Mm.
And effectively, that's the problem the chief minister, our current chief minister, Alf Cannon, seems to be faced with, in that he's sacked so many ministers, probably more than any other chief minister, that his options are becoming more limited.
Well, I feel sorry for us all, really, because our current system isn't working well. Mm. And we're not getting the right thinking into the Council of Ministers in the first place. So it's deficit high quality strategic thinking in the first place. And the thinking coming in is, as it were, silo influence. So it can come into the Council of Ministers. It may very well be the wish and will of the CEO of a particular department, but that hasn't been examined across the piece in terms of its overall importance to the Isle of Man strategically. And there's very little the chief minister can do about it. I mean, there's been talk about, should we have a directly elected chief minister? I believe that's a bridge too far, Phil, because, if you ended up with the wrong chief minister, we could be really exposed.
And of course, what we did back in the 1990, wasn't it, the Council of Ministers Act, the introduction of ministerial government, we introduced the power element to create a government as such, but at no time was the checks and balances put in to that system. So I would always say to anyone in the current system, you need to get into Council of Ministers, because that's where the substantial amount of power and control over all the main sort of policy levers sits. But it shouldn't really, because actually Parliament, the Tynwald, should have some greater level of control over what's going on.
I'm not being intentionally disparaging about the Council of Ministers system, i.e. something that we should dispose of. What what future Isle of Man is saying is that we never finished the job, Phil.
Mm, absolutely.
We brought the Council of Ministers system in, and I always felt, as a much younger man watching this come in, and even in those days prior to politics, I had significant dealings with government as a businessman, as business people do. And I was always of the opinion, well, yes, good, we've started the Council of Ministers system. What's next? Where do we develop it further? How do we understand its weaknesses? And we've never done that. We've sort of assembled the system and then sort of let it run. And so, to your specific point, yes, it's desperately weakened at Tynwald. But the Council of Ministers itself also it lacks a huge amount of high-level thinking, strategic thinking.
And where did that go wrong? Because when Council of Ministers was introduced, maybe it was just the group of people, I don't know, but that there seemed to be quite a lot of innovation taking place at that stage. So how has it drifted to where we are now?
I think, well, it was always, from the word go, it was always deficient. But you've got to remember that the profile of politicians at that time and the profile of CEOs, or leaders of boards as they were all pretty experienced people. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that the Isle of Man was poor. And politicians in those days were navigating a world where there was very little money, as were the senior civil servants, and they were used to running on a shoestring, effectively. And they made it work at the outset. But as time went by and the Isle of Man got more and more money, complacency set in, arrogance in at departmental level, that we're in charge of these matters. And really, to some extent, to some CEOs, it wouldn't really matter if things went wrong, in the sense that it would be the minister whose head was chopped off, metaphorically speaking, and another minister would come in, and the public outside would think, oh, well, gosh, somebody's paid the price for that. That's great. No, because the department would just blunder on. Mm. So it's a huge shame that we haven't addressed these issues to refine our system, because if we did this, Phil, I actually think that we would end up with a good system and a lot better than a lot of other people.
Yeah.
So my hope, and that of the small team in future Isle of Man, is that this concept of how do we make government work better becomes an important part of the election in September 2020.
And it is crucial, isn't it? I mean, it's almost, well, it is, you know, it's not almost, it is more important than individual policies on housing or the economy or whatever, because quite frankly, well, certainly from my experience in Council of Ministers and in Tynwald, I increasingly realised that the system, if anything, is designed to stop things happening. Mm. It is not designed to come up with creative new thinking as to what the next big thing for the economy needs to be. And by golly, we do need to find what
Indeed
that is.
Indeed we do. Well, what an extraordinary situation we have, where we have the Council of Ministers and Tynwald, as it were, not enjoying the level of trust that is required on the part of the electorate. At the same time, the Council of Ministers and Tynwald is also deficient a lot of high-level thinking. And so we've created these huge gaps. These three pillars bring everything together again. And one of the key points in these refinements is that the Chief Minister would enjoy a new power. And that power would be to, as it were, observe what was going on in Tynwald and observe what was going on in the Council of Ministers and apply on occasion, when he or she thought it was appropriate, to introduce a referendum on a particular matter, to say, yes, I hear what everybody's saying, but we need to take this to the people. And some people listening to this, well, you know, Chris Robertshaw, you're talking nonsense. We've got consultations. Well, no, because consultations are, as it were, they emanate from the department, and therefore, without disrespecting any department in particular, it can influence the returns on the consultations depending on what the particular department wants.
And should we, I mean, maybe if we explored a little bit more about the problem, As things stand, I mean, and certainly, again, I can only go on my own experience as a minister, I could get a whole load of stuff done that was within my control as minister. Where it started to go astray was when I needed councillor ministers' support for something, because councillor ministers didn't always agree with what I wanted, and that would hinder me. So our system is exceptionally good at allowing individual ministers to do the individual stuff in their departments. What it's not good at is recognising that, as you say, the broader picture about what's going to be in the best interests of Isle of Man government, because effectively Isle of Man government doesn't exist as a single entity.
No.
And so what ends up happening, because it's the easiest thing to do if you have ministers who have any level of political drive, they can get loads and loads of stuff done within their departments, but they don't always have a kind of a unified aim at which you could see works across the whole of government.
Well, you make a very good point, but and I don't want to be disparaging to any existing member, but if you look back historically, people coming into politics often came into politics with all the cuts and bruises of the mistakes they'd made in life, determined that they weren't going to replicate those in the political environment. So great experience, you know, existed. Long-serving CEOs as well, with deep experience. That interaction was quite healthy, and it sort of takes us back to an early part of our discussion here, where we said, well, where did it go wrong? Well, we're seeing CEOs changing ever faster, are often much more junior, younger people coming into politics without necessarily a significant life experience, or lacking in business experience. And it's difficult to see how you can put an inexperienced person in charge of a department with an inexperienced CEO and expect it to work, absent of the will of the people saying, we think this is going in the right direction, and absent from the concept of, okay, independent departments can have their own consultants, but what does a broader-based sense of a wise heads think should be happening? So I think the problem is the independent nature of the department creates this silo thinking where, as a minister, you bring something forward and you watch all the other ministers around the table focusing on what they're doing and saying, yeah, yes, I get what you're saying, but we need to focus on what I want.
Or even worse, you get a situation where one department's legal requirements, statutory obligations require them to do one thing, which is at complete odds with another department.
Well, Phil, you almost opened the door there to a huge independent discussion about my real deep concerns about the Attorney General's department, but one programme doesn't allow us to look at that.
We'll just close the lid on that kind of word.
close that one. But coming back to the Chief Minister, that's the additional role the Chief Minister needs. In other words, all 24 members in the Keys should rightfully come in as constituency MHKs. They are the person or people that the constituency electorate have voted for. The Chief Minister's role should be more than just hiring and firing ministers. It should be the person who has a responsibility to keep the finger on the thumb of what do the people of the Isle of Man really think about things. And that's where the concept of a referendum comes in. So let's be sort of sensible about this. The Chief Minister would only want maybe two, maybe three referendum a year. But imagine how people would feel about the idea of, OK, we've elected the individuals, but we can still continue to have influence in the direction of government in a world now, Phil, which you and I and everybody else knows is changing at such a radical pace. It is so difficult to define at an election point where things should be going in the following 5 years.
And of course, that would address potentially one of the issues which several MHKs have said to me over a number of years that I've been covering politics for Manx Radio. Several members of the House of Keys say, well, I made no promises to the electorate because I'm only one of 24. And effectively then, you've got no mandate because you've not said what you're going to do. So I presume a referendum then allows at least some level of democratic responsibility to lie with policy decisions.
Go back to what you said about MHK saying that to you. It's worse than that, because if you're a backbencher, there's hardly much point these days in being sort of constructive opposition. Mm. I don't mean destructive opposition. I mean constructive, because you know that when something arrives on the floor of Keys or the floor of Timbald, the chances of it going through because the Council of Ministers are for it and the members in the department concerned are for it, it's going to go through. So what's the point? And that's where sort of Timbald itself has been seriously weakened. Mm.
Yeah, and it is an interesting one, this. I mean, personally speaking, I always made commitments to the electorate. I said these were the policy objectives that I would aim to deliver were I elected. And looking back, I felt that most of what I said I was going to do, I managed to do. But even in those circumstances, you can only offer things that you think you've got a fair chance of delivering. And provided you work with your colleagues and you have a collegiate approach, you've got a fair chance of delivering your agenda. But that wouldn't allow for, and never could allow for, that bigger strategic thinking that's required, for example, to decide where the Manx economy is going to end up in the next 10 to 20 years in the UK and most other parliamentary democracies. There are think tanks that come up with these policy ideas, and those policy ideas are then adopted by political parties, changed, adapted to their particular political philosophy, and they can then be progressed. But we don't have people sitting, spending long hours pondering what the next big thing for the Isle of Man is.
Great comment there, because it opens so many doors on so many issues. But what I would say is that, and I repeat, and it's very important to get this message across, that the concept of future Isle of Man is not about forming, about policy. It's about how to allow policy to form successfully. So what you would have, instead of what we've got now, which is brand new people, as it were, standing up for election, supposedly somehow being expected to be a ready-made, fully informed person who knows exactly what they want to do and where they want to go. With the proposals that the three pillars represent, it would mean that those people would have continual guidance and advice at a sort of a wise level to help them make those decisions. So, but I'd also say this, that introducing these three pillars would enhance the ability of individuals to perhaps get their policies, as it were, through the system. At the moment, it's now pretty well died, that now. I mean, the situation is progressively deteriorating, which comes back to your earlier point. Why did it work before and perhaps not now?
As I was saying earlier, as a minister, individually, you can do an awful lot. I referred to the potential conflict that can exist between one department having a responsibility to do one thing and another department having a responsibility to do the complete opposite. And that, of course, causes problems. Why do you think it is that, bearing in mind that these are known problems, the idea or the suggestion of a single government, a single legal entity of Isle of Man government has been around now for certainly as long as your involvement in the House of Keys. So why have successive governments chosen to just not do it?
Comfort, complacency, perhaps a failure on my part not to explain it, as much as I should have done. But as I say, I'm sort of cursed, really. I can't let this go because it's so important. I mean, let's be clear, we're living beyond our budget every year now, since 2011. and according to the Pink Book, we're forecast to continue living way beyond our budget till 2030 and presumably beyond. The damage that's doing, Phil, is just too awful to contemplate. We won't dwell on them now because it's another door that we're opening, but we need to refine and redefine how Treasury works and how our high-level strategic thinking works. But the way to do it, in very simple terms, would be to lean back and get some of the elements and advantages that we had in the old system of boards and putting...
And what would those advantages be? Because
a lot
of people who lived through the old board system say, actually, it was a bit of a disaster because you couldn't... Whereas an individual board, you could do a lot. The individual boards, trying to get them to work together and collaborate, was the problem.
That's exactly why the Council of Ministers was formed. Mm. And I'm not saying you dismantle the Council of Ministers or the departments or the ministerial system per se. I would certainly only have one member in each department. But what needs to happen is that the departments need to be simplified and refined down to their frontline services, instead of trying to be this sort of clumsy conglomerate of a number of things where the CEO is not a specialist in any, but a generalist in all of them.
So an example of that would be DOI,
that
has a responsibility to provide housing, but also has responsibility to deliver housing policy.
Yeah, and it becomes complex. And also the mindset also... A mindset is created around this idea that we're in charge of this and we'll get our minister to do what we expect him or her to do. And the chances are that they'll get it through the Council of Ministers, which is, in effect, will mean that there's a very good chance of getting it through Tynwald. So who's in charge now? Is it the people? No. Is it the Tynwald? No. Is it the Council of Ministers? Perhaps not. It's actually the department.
It has been suggested to me that what you get at election time is a change in the Tynwald squad.
Yeah.
But it's still the same. It's still the same team playing the same game. And you might change the faces, but you don't change the policies.
Well, that's exactly the same as when a minister's removed from a department because something goes wrong. So you're not achieving anything, and it removes the bureaucracy, as it were, from the political process, in the sense that, well, we're in charge here, and somehow or other, future IOM has got to get this message home and clear before the next election, because once the election is over and the new, particularly the new members are sucked in and their egos are stroked, and you get pretty close to this yes minister philosophy, and it's an awful lot, particularly for an inexperienced person as a new minister, to cope with all of this and demand change, and the system knows it. So
that almost implies as though there's some conscious approach there. I think it's more of a subconscious thing. I don't think the system is inherently underhand in the way that it goes about its business. It's just the way it is. I mean, good example, I think, in a programme a couple of weeks ago, and Corlett was talking to me, and she said, look, I really do need to get elected, because there's a whole load of stuff that was really important to me when I got elected. It's 4 years ago now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't managed to achieve these things. And unfortunately, I think, this is not a judgment on Anne Corlett, or indeed on the current Tynwald members, that the problem is it's really difficult to achieve anything because of the way in which we do government.
Business, yeah. But surely there's a level of thinking got to occur amongst the membership of Keys and Tynwald that runs higher than personal agendas.
But then you get this, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Approach,
well, it is broke.
And
it is broke.
If anything is broke, it's a democratic system which struggles to get 50% of the people to turn out to vote.
A system that does not access the very best possible strategic advice across the piece. A system where people are increasingly becoming disgruntled with the with our governmental system, a system that's running year in, year out on a deficit, pretending, you know, almost Treasury is almost gaslighting the general public now, along the lines that, you know, if we carry on this way, but I would say that we're throwing away the future for our children and grandchildren. And I'm not going to be the person who just let that happen. And that's why I'm carrying on with what I'm talking about. So coming back to Anne's, Anne is perfectly entitled to her individual constituency issues that she feels strongly. But what is she saying and what are the others saying about how are we going to balance the books? Look, you and I were in a council of ministers that had to ran straight into a brick wall of £200 million loss. In that 5 years, we recovered £125 million of it.
It was very hard going and
very painful. And I, for one, became an extremely unpopular character.
So did I. Even more unpopular, I think I was.
I bid the highest.
Well, I don't know. You won your next election and I lost mine. So
it was very... But we left office, as it were, with a £75 million annual budget deficit. We're still there. I mean, for goodness sake... We're nearly two houses on from that. Shame on us, Phil.
Yeah.
And there seems to be no sense of purpose about how we're going to grip it.
And the issue is not coming up with brighter, shinier new policies on a whole range of different specific issues about housing or government finances or whatever. The issue, certainly as you're describing, is actually... three fundamental threads that have to change if things are going to happen.
Absolutely, but focusing on this issue, staying with the issue of money, the concept of maintaining the departments and the ministers, but simplifying them by saying, okay, you now focus on all the frontline services and you become accountable minister for those frontline services. Get it in your head that you're there to be accountable to the people for these frontline services. Strategic thinking, as it were, then would rise up outside. There are all sorts of small functions that would sit better, as it were, outside of a department. But you can do this once you've got a unified government, because you could, for example, DESC is a bit of a conglomeration as well. Let it focus on education and be really good and tell us how they're going to... play their part in the strategic high-level process of making sure the Isle of Man responds properly to the massive future impact of AI intelligence, you know? But the matters of leisure and culture, again, important issues, they shouldn't sit subordinate somewhere. They should have their own people who are dedicated to those functions, who know all about them and who care hugely about them. They would sit on a small part-time board. They would bring their case straight into Timbald with one representative in the House to stand up for them. And they would then stand or fall on the case they made that they were passionate about in isolation. How many people, for example, I'm talking about strategic issues now, they've got some brilliant people on the Isle of Man, but they become so frustrated because they bring forward ideas. They can't bring it to a strategic think tank body type organisation. All they can do is take them into a particular department. And if that department thinks, no, that's not our priority, that's not where we sit, or it doesn't comply with that. It never, that idea, those concepts never see the light of day.
So, and it's often worse than it doesn't fit with our particular thing. That's a big risk for our department to take.
Exactly.
And sadly, and probably more so as a result of the Chief Minister's approach when it comes to being quite ruthless if someone isn't pulling in the particular direction he wanted them to pull, they seem to find themselves spending more time in the garden than perhaps they were. And as a result of that, perhaps there's even less willingness amongst senior officers to take any of these risks, to see a golden opportunity that comes along, but recognise, well, actually, if I do this and it goes wrong, that's my career finished.
And it's more likely to be the minister's career finished rather than the individual CEO.
Well, at the beginning of this administration, it seemed to be the CEOs that went.
That's another rabbit hole because that's towards COVID, isn't it, and things like that. No, I think the concept of a unified government and simplification of the department's functions and the identification of elements which need to be taken out and dealt with separately would make the what would then become a CEO, COO rather than a CEO, makes their lives much more manageable and much clearer, and therefore healthy for the minister, healthy for Timewald, healthy for the civil service. And sadly, another thing, another damage that's been done over the years is this blunt instrument of Treasury. You know, I'm very happy to do a programme on Treasury alone if you consider it, Phil. The blunt instrument of applying Treasury control over everything from a budgetary point of view results in the wrong things happening. Mm. It takes away the expenditure programme being delivered to frontline services because the people making the decisions inside the department are focused on the people who make the decisions, if you understand what I'm saying, rather than the accountability for frontline services.
And actually, another good example of that, and this was one that I eventually managed to persuade Treasury of the foolhardy nature of, was being asked, as I think it was DAF Minister, the old Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry Department, that I was asked to significantly increase the income for the sawmill. And it was possible, but they wouldn't give us or allow us to spend the extra money that we needed. And bear in mind, it's a sawmill. We couldn't have the extra money to chop the trees down. So we couldn't get the raw product to create the additional income. And you know, at the time, there was a good model and a good mechanism. Yeah. Eventually, Treasury were persuaded that actually, if you're going to increase sales, you have to increase the cost of sales as well to be able to deliver that increased
income. But you
see,
the mill was being controlled by a blunt instrument, this body with these conglomerate responsibilities that didn't necessarily see that from their budgetary perspective as a priority. But if you had something like the steam mill sitting in its own right, with its own small focus, specific, intense focus on the issue, with the right to make its case to Timewald, which is where it would be heard, and the members of Timewald would then be in a much clearer position about their vote having value. The value of a vote has almost completely disappeared now. These things are decided in the department and then the Council of Ministers. It may be a very important issue, but not something the other ministers can necessarily focus on. So we're being led, as it were, backwards. Everything's backwards. Instead of concepts about what really matters for the Isle of Man, as it were, emerging at a high level and then being examined intensely at an operational level and then going through the system in a way which could enjoy specific focus, we've got these rather strange processes where things emerge out of a department or don't when they should. It's pretty hopeless.
Moving to another of the pillars, the referenda. Referenda generally haven't happened in the Isle of Man. And I would say even up to 5 years ago, there was a pretty sound reason why that shouldn't happen, because it was complicated. We don't have the level of media coverage on the Isle of Man to allow for... or certainly didn't have the ability to get into everyone's home with messages. On the one hand, this idea would deliver this. On the other hand, these are the drawbacks. Those sorts of messages, often nuanced messages, it wasn't easy to deliver that to everybody's home. you can do that now. And yes, certainly the Isle of Man government has become increasingly active in producing short videos on social media, things like this. Now, of course, as a member of Fairbanks Radio, I would always argue it's a good idea to have the independent scrutiny of journalism when you are hearing these messages. But regardless, it is an awful lot easier to get messages over. It's also an awful lot easier to take snapshots of what the public are thinking than perhaps it was. So actually, the idea of a referendum on a particular issue, first of all, it requires politicians to actually make their case. And but it is so much easier now to actually deliver on things.
It is, yes. But let's look at how future Isle of Man sees referenda working. First of all, not too many and not too few. Two, it would be within the remit of the Chief Minister to decide whether something should or should not happen. Very interesting point here that he or she would have to be very careful, because if the Chief Minister refused to take something to a referendum that the people felt should go to them, then there needs to be a mechanism where the people, as it were, can trip into place a referendum. Now, no Chief Minister would want to find him or herself in a position where he or she was refusing a matter to go to the public when he or she would know that the public might very well say, no, we want to have this examined. That process undermines the authority of the Chief Minister. So the Chief Minister will be very, very careful indeed, making absolutely sure that he or she was keeping their finger on the pulse of matters. As far as an actual referendum was concerned, in fact, in a few days, I hope to have in my hand an actual booklet, which is the presentation made to each elector in Switzerland on a specific subject. They have different sorts of referenda. Ours would start off simply on the advisory basis, not the mandatory, because we'd have to learn how to do it. But it's a very, very simple booklet, and it would arrive in the elector's home, and it would say, on the authority of the Chief Minister, this matter has been placed before the people for consideration. Page two, and it sort of describes what it is. Page two inside would be, these are all the reasons why it should happen. Page three is, these are all the reasons why it shouldn't happen. And then there's a voting slip and an opportunity to do it. So you build that into the system, it becomes pretty straightforward. It also, coming back to your point about media, social media, etc., it also gives grounds for that subject, two or three times a year, to be examined through the media. And I think the media would jump at that. Mm. Because it would be, everybody would know it would be a matter of full engagement, not something that, you know, was hidden in the Council of Ministers or reluctantly got through Timbald. It would be something that everybody would want to get engaged in and have their say. That's healthy democracy, Phil. And I genuinely believe it would work. As far as this concept that keeps coming up about, well, it's too expensive, I think that's people just trying to push it away. Put it this way, if you dealt with matters strategically in the proper fashion, in the right way, we will be saving millions on, for example, misaligned project concepts. You know, the one concept might very well prove in the future that it costs us £100 million more than it should have done. Had it been dealt with in the right way, as it were, across the piece, that money would have been saved. Also, I think the people of the Isle of Man would instinctively err towards an attitude that, you know what, I think we've got enough regulation now. And Timbald would then have to be very aware that the people are not going to let regulation keep on rolling out. Mm. Part of the defence of the way the current system works is that the departments are looking for, as it were, justification of actions that they take, and they then they bring forward the latest regulation from another jurisdiction. I remember a time, Phil, when Timbledon Keys would be very reluctant to jump headfirst into something. They would sort of step back and say, let's see how it works elsewhere and let's take guidance from that before we consider this matter any further. And we seem to be twisting that round now. Some ministers, some members want to be the first in the list, as it were, of look at me, look what I've achieved. This is, you know, that's not the way the Isle of Man should work. It just simply isn't.
And the reason why, because, you know, there are those of us of a nationalist bent that would say actually the Isle of Man is big enough and capable enough to do whatever it wants, which indeed it is. But we do have to remember that we have even within our existing structure, we've only got a fairly limited number of people who can develop policy. They tend to be paid by government departments. So that the department, I guess, in your eyes, inevitably is going to be that departmental policy development is inevitably going to be skewed in the favour of the department rather than a broader cross-government picture. Yeah. And the problem then is, I mean, the obvious one is assisted dying. We don't have a lot of policy officers who've considered all the potential aspects associated with that. Whether it was right or wrong to crack on and be the first in the British Isles to achieve this, I suppose only time will tell.
Yeah, but that was very much in the minds of Alex Allinson when he brought it forward, that it was a personal ambition. It shouldn't be a personal ambition. It's what's right. Let's be ambivalent about whether that should have happened or not. I think it should have been something that should have been dealt with under the concept of a referenda, where there was a mature debate developed fully in public, with as much advice as possible to the electorate. And even when the electorate then spoke, it might well be, and it'd have to be a brave Council of Ministers, a brave Timwell, that would say, no, we're not going to take any notice of the people, we're going to go in a different direction. But we also now have far too much influence in our departments of what's happening across. Quite a few pretty senior civil servants are coming from away and bringing that thinking in. Well, I would say that thinking now, particularly from the UK, is very, very questionable indeed as to how their government is working. And I believe we can get our government to work a damn sight better than there. So let's stop looking that way for advice. I mean, perhaps it's wrong for me to say this, but I was shocked when the new chief constable from across came over and seemed, in a public sense, to be preoccupied with the idea of we have to manifest an evidence of gun-carrying policemen. And I'm thinking, no, we don't. That's not how the Isle of Man works. And he said on Manx Radio, on an early interview, I don't want to be the chief constable that got that wrong and something happens. Well, you know, how often do we have gun issues on the Isle of Man, Phil? And yet, that he was bringing the UK mindset into the Isle of Man in a completely different jurisdiction. And I think I'm so worried about the way the police service is going across in the UK now that where's the next chief constable going to be? We were successful with Gary Roberts, our first local chief constable. And I think there was a good one before that from the UK. But the current mindset of chief constables in the UK, the police service, has gone sort of woke, I would put it that way.
Well, Chief Constable, if you are listening, I'm always eager to talk to you, and you can put your side of the debate. Sadly, we are almost out of time. We've only got a minute left. Mm. How will people find out more about Future Isle of Man?
Well, I want to raise the profile of Future Isle of Man as much as I can. I'm happy to attend meetings, do presentations, particularly those who are interested in developing political parties, because I want to assure them that this is not about policy. They, you know, one must respect what people want to bring forward in policy terms to Tim, or what I want to persuade and encourage them to believe, is that you make these three pillar changes and what they want becomes more possible than it is now. So there's an awful lot to do in the next 13 months, is it? Yeah, 13 months. I'm absolutely committed to it. I would like to think that at least 13 of the successful members, regardless of which way they sit politically, had arrived in Keys with an understanding that these three pillars need to be initiated, and it will be up to them to get on with it.
That was former Douglas East MHK Chris Robertshaw. So what do you think? Is he onto something? Would these bold policy principles work, do you think? Or perhaps you think he had his chance to deliver when in government? I think we can all agree that something needs to change. I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geisiakrom. Thanks for listening.